This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, episode number 764. Thank you so much for joining me today as I have just returned late last evening to my new home in Las Vegas, Nevada, a no income tax state. Did I mention the no income taxes? Yes, a big wealth strategy that I'm going to bug you with once in a while is to get yourself, if you can, I understand that not all of you can, get to a low or no income tax location, because just paying that money to the black hole called government, it just, you don't usually see anything for it. I mean, considering all the money I pay in taxes, and I don't even have a library card. So, get yourself to a no or low income tax state if you can. Well, I am back from 9 days on the road. Wow, that was tiring and exhilarating at the same time. It started off with a drive to Phoenix, where I hosted our Venture Alliance weekend, and we had Charles Goyette, Ken McElroy, real estate. I mean, Ken McElroy is really one of the biggest names in real estate. Of course, he does apartment syndications, not what we do, but he's got a lot of experience and he's just such a sharing, giving guy. We've had him on the show a couple of times, as you know, and we'll have him on again. And he spoke to our Venture Alliance group in a great intimate setting. And then Tom Wheelwright, another one of the Rich Dad authors, along with Ken McElroy in the Robert Kiyosaki Rich Dad series. He's got a great book, Tax-Free Wealth. He spoke to our group as well, and it was just a great intimate setting. Ken McElroy joined us for lunch, and we just got to hang out with him for a few hours. So that was great. I did mention that before on a prior episode, so we won't dive into that too deeply here. But and then I had two speaking slots at the IMN conference where it was kind of a mix of people at that, several hundred people. I don't know the exact number. I want to say it was maybe 700-800 people at that event. I had two speaking slots there, and a lot of institutional investors, big players in the single-family real estate game, because our business is maturing and becoming more institutional. You know, again, in the overall scheme of things, when you consider about 15 million single-family homes in America owned by mom-and-pop investors, people that own less than 4 units total, you know, the institutional segment of the single family home business is a drop in the bucket overall in the big scheme of things. But it is interesting to watch them, learn from them, watch their behavior, what they're buying, what they're selling, what is their attitude. And then after that, and I'm going to go back to that in just a moment, but after that, I flew to Austin, Texas, one of the markets that we used to recommend, but of course it got way too expensive. So Austin is a little out of reach for getting that good old 1% rule, 1% per month. Our investors that are in Austin, myself included, you know, if they've got stabilized properties, you just hold on to them and just enjoy the appreciation you've gotten, enjoy the cash flow, because your basis was locked in earlier at a time when prices are lower and it's sensible. And you might want to consider, of course, the refi till you die strategy. Well, don't even consider that. Just do it. Refi till you die is a fantastic strategy. But also the 2-for-1 strategy, where you sell one of your highly appreciated properties, as I've talked about and I have done with my portfolio, and I continue to do and continue to consider selling one property to buy two, or maybe even three, as you heard. We did a show somewhat recently where one of our investment counselors just traded one for three. Yeah, one for three, not one for two, or two for one, however you want to say it. Three for one, two for one. That can be a great strategy, of course. But yeah, going back, Austin, Jason, stay on track. I know it's early and you didn't get much sleep last night. Okay, here we go. Fantastic time at my friend Ryan Daniel Moran's conference, Freedom Fastlane, which is internet marketing and a little bit on the investing side. I spoke on real estate investing there with some of my colleagues in the business, and that was really interesting. And I was just so delighted to see so many of our clients there. Gosh, I don't want to start naming you off, but we had, I'm going to guess, a good three dozen of our clients there that came up to me and said hello, and it was just great seeing all of you. I just don't dare to name you because I know I'm going to miss somebody and feel bad about it, but it was wonderful seeing all of you there. It really was very heartwarming, number one, to know the reach that we have on this podcast with our business in general in helping people invest in the most historically proven asset class in America, or really in the world, income property, and also the most tax-favored asset class in America, income-producing real estate. I got to tell you, here is my point of kind of telling you what I've been up to for the past 9 days with back-to-back, three conferences back-to-back. The sentiment is pretty darn bullish. And a lot of that is because of Trump, our first real estate president, that I seem to be the only one talking about that. I don't hear anybody else saying Trump, our first real estate president. Now, you know, I have my qualms about Trump. I think he says a lot of crazy stuff. You know, he can be reckless, no question. But I am excited about seeing him shake things up. Because the last several decades has not been good for America. I don't think anybody could really argue that a continuation of the status quo would be a good thing, of the corrupt career politicians. A lot of people are criticizing Trump, saying, you're not draining the swamp like you said you would. Look at all these insiders. Well, folks, I mean, seriously, who else are you going to tap to get into your administration, right? You've got to get experienced people, especially when you're not a career politician, right? You're an outsider. Trump is an outsider. He's never held office before, which is pretty amazing. I mean, how long has it been, or have we ever had that, where we have a president that hasn't held some elective office? I mean, even good old Ronald Reagan, the Gipper, you know, he was governor of California, of course. But before that, I don't think he held office. And, you know, except the Screen Actors Guild president and so forth. But it is interesting. And the sentiment is pretty darn bullish. Now, I want to compare and contrast sort of three elements, if you will. Because yesterday, at my friend Ryan's conference, I got to meet Peter Diamandis. And I talk a lot about Peter Diamandis on the show, and he is a futurist. He talks about all of these incredible things that we are on the verge of. Of course, we've had his co-author on the show, Stephen Kotler. They're the authors of Bold and Abundance. The future is better than you think. Fantastic information. And Peter talks a lot about technology. And he doesn't say it directly, but I'll say it, the deflationary effects of technology, which are pretty incredible. We all know that. We all know that in our pocket, probably right now as you listen to this, you are holding a, in your pocket, you have this computer that is more powerful than all of the computers that NASA had when we landed on the moon during the Apollo program. You have this computer in your pocket that has more information that you have at your fingertips than Bill Clinton had when he was president, when he was the most powerful person in the human race as president of the United States. That phone, that smartphone you have, has more information than the president of the United States had not too long ago. It's an amazing time to be alive. So, and look how cheap that thing is. You know, you can buy that for, what, $200? Is that about the cheapest, well, decent smartphone? So that is a deflationary force. Now let's talk about the business cycle. So we are many years, arguably 5 to 7 years into a recovery. I've talked about the recovery before. I think it's largely smoke and mirrors, built on a house of cards. But the question is, compared to what? Compared to what? Meaning what other country? What other country has this perfectly sustainable, non-fiat money, non-Keynesian type of government, right? Well, pretty much no other country, or at least no other large country. I know you can argue about Switzerland and so forth, and you know, it's just not even worth having that discussion. I mean, compared to what? You can criticize the U.S., I certainly do all the time, and talk about how ridiculous our system is, how this whole financial system is built on a house of cards, and you're right. But the question is, relativity, the theory of relativity, not Einstein's, but Hartman's, compared to what? Compared to what other country? The U.S. is doing pretty darn good when you compare it. Not compare it to this ideological idea of being on the gold standard and being fiscally solvent and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We've all heard that stuff. In fact, I've talked about that stuff and promoted that stuff on many other episodes on the show. But compared to what? So as the business cycle goes, we are due for a recession as the cycle goes. However, compared to what? See, you can argue that we're 5, even 7 years, depending on how you count, into a recovery. But a recovery is from the worst economic malady that this country experienced since the Great Depression. And we will call this last one, of course, the Great Recession. Okay, 7 decades where we had the worst disaster in American economic history. I mean, I don't know. You go really far back. I know there were some Civil War times and people were printing protest coins. I own a couple of those protest coins. That's a whole nother discussion where they, you know, were trying to get out of the monetary system and break away from the federal government and all this kind of stuff, right? But, you know, look, let's just talk about it. Great Depression versus Great Recession. So that was an extremely bad time. We can all agree on that. So this recovery is from a very low, very bad baseline. And that's why I don't think you can argue the business cycle the same way you normally would. I mean, look, every 7 years or so, we tend to have a recession. But this time, this part of the recovery is measured off a very low baseline. So it's different, right? The famous last words of investors, this time it's different. I know. I might be sounding a little like that. And then we've got this really interesting, and that's not a value judgment, but it's an interesting administration coming in to run the country with just a massively different ideology. We've got this president with a, well, I'd say a rather healthy, I'm joking, of course, a rather large ego, and that would be Mr. Trump, of course, president-elect. And, you know, I think he is going to do whatever it takes to just juice the economy. And I'm not saying that's necessarily good for the long run. You know, he might, and we don't know how he'll govern yet exactly. It's a bit of a wild card for sure. But he might be the ultimate Keynesian money printer, right? We might look back and say, look at Bush and Obama. You know, they were just spend. I mean, Bush, he called himself a Republican, but he was really just, as I've said before, a Democrat who believed in God, whereas most Democrats believe in government. And so they were spenders. They spent money like drunken sailors. One of Ronald Reagan's great quotes from long ago was to say that the government spends money like a drunken sailor is an insult to drunken sailors. because the government just, it's absurd, right? Well, I don't know. Maybe Trump will be like that. You know, he's got this $1 trillion infrastructure plan. I mean, is he going to get that from supply side economics? Where's that money going to come from? Is it going to be a Keynesian money printing party where there's going to be just a massive amount of printing? Will interest rates go up? You know, how will the Federal Reserve react to Trump? So if rates go up, hey, you want to lock in your 30-year fixed rate loans now, because if rates go up, that's actually good for you. The investors that already have that debt locked in for 3 decades, the debt that you won't make the last payment on until 2047. Do you know how much the world will change by then? 3-decade-long, incredibly cheap, historically low, fixed-rate debt. Debt is my favorite four-letter word. I absolutely love debt as long as it's not consumer debt. I have zero consumer debt, but I try to have as much real estate debt, well, income-producing real estate debt, as I can, because it's a very powerful tool used judiciously. So we will see how that all pans out. But the bottom line is that the sentiment is bullish for our first real estate president. And I tell you, I am looking to do some more two-for-ones with my own portfolio, where I trade one property and get two more, maybe three more if I can. But yeah, I'm looking for more investment opportunities, because as little time as I have to be a good investor, because I've got businesses to run and a life to run and all of that stuff, you know, I'm probably a little busier than most of our listeners, not all of you. I know some of you may outbusy me, as if busyness is some sort of status symbol. But yeah, I'm pretty bullish on real estate right now, or income properties specifically. Not in the cyclical markets. Those, if we do go into a recession, which I don't know if that's going to happen, folks, because Trump has some really good ideas about the economy. Love him or hate him, but some of the stuff he's going to do with his trade policies are very inflationary, and inflation is our biggest home run, all right? We can make money in any type of economy, but inflation being the most favorable of the three basic economic maladies, inflation, deflation, stagnation, and I've told you before on the show how to make money in any of those scenarios, but inflation being the home run, Trump is inflationary. I really think that's where it's going to go, and we're going to have a lot more inflation discussions on future episodes, and we're going to discuss how to react and respond and be effective in a Trump administration as an investor. So lots more to come, but let's get to our guest today. Let's talk about the American boomerang. You're going to be excited about this one too. So there is some good stuff coming up. All right, visit jasonhartman.com. Meet the Masters is about half full, or I guess if you're a pessimist, you could say it's half empty. So ticket prices will be going up again soon. A lot of you have been registering like crazy. We've got it's our annual event. We only do this once a year in January, the day after the presidential inauguration in January in Irvine, California. If you live back east or in the Midwest or in any cold climate around the world, I know we've got investors from all around the world that fly in for this event, and our teams from all around the country are flying in for it. Hey, come to California in January, Southern California in January, pretty nice place to be. So make it a vacation. Hey, bring your family, go to Disneyland, right? Disneyland is right there nearby. So get your tickets for Meet the Masters of Income Property, Irvine, California, January, jasonhartman.com/events. jasonhartman.com/events. Get your tickets, and we will see you there. All right, let's go to our guest. It's my pleasure to welcome Nick Adams. He is the founder and executive director of FLAG, and he will tell you what that acronym means in just a moment. He's a columnist for townhall.com, a former Centennial Institute policy fellow, author of the best-selling book, The American Boomerang, How the World's Greatest Turnaround Nation Will Do It Again, and author of the new books, Green Card Warrior, My Quest for Legal Immigration in an Illegal System, and Retaking America, Crushing Political Correctness. Nick, welcome. How are you?
G'day, Jason. It's great to be with you, sir.
It's good to have you with us. And where are you located?
I'm located in the great state that is Texas, the state that is known for the belt buckle and the pickup truck and chicken fried steak and bluebell ice cream and all those other wonderful capitalist things.
There you go. And we can tell by your accent that you are an immigrant from down under, right?
From South Texas. That's right.
How?
Very, very deep south, yes. Australia. You got it in one.
Fantastic, Australia. Good stuff. Well, everybody wants to know, you know, how will Trump affect the economy? What does it mean? What action, if any, should people take with their investments and their thinking and their businesses and so forth? And when did you write the American Boomerang book? What is the publication date for that?
Well, Jason, in 2014, The American Boomerang, How the World's Greatest Turnaround Nation was published with a foreword by Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. And it essentially dealt with what I believed needed to happen for an American renaissance, for a constitutional, patriotic revival of the United States, which I, unlike many others, considered to be only 5 minutes away at any given time because of the spirit and the mentality that Americans have, a very unique and exceptional one. And it was a book outlining my 10-point plan for the United States to undertake such a renaissance. And that involved ending the waste, paying back the debt, limiting the government, axing political correctness, protecting the borders, preserving Judeo-Christian traditions, ending the culture of entitlement, cutting taxes, exercising fidelity to the Constitution, and keeping the peace through unquestioned military advantage. And all of those things are not just things that can be done necessarily at the ballot box or by government policy, but I think a lot of the ailments affecting the greatest country in the history of the world have been cultural ones, which is why I've been thrilled to see that in recent times, at least at the ballot box, which is the first step, Americans have kind of taken a step toward those 10 things outlined in the American Boomerang.
So do you think Trump represents all 10 of those things? Or maybe I should ask you more broadly, the last election in general?
Well, you know, Jason, I came out for Donald Trump on the 15th of June 2015. The 16th of June 2015, which was when he announced. I was on the Trump train from day one. I read The Art of the Deal when I was 11 years old. And that book really shaped my life and my career. And so when he announced, while he didn't best represent, I guess, my conservative ideology, I was instantly supporting him and was very public with my support, with my commentating on Fox News and elsewhere. And I think that he most certainly represents a very significant part of that 10-point plan. You know, Jason, I got into this game to change the culture, and because culture is far more important than politics. And culture trumps politics, pardon the pun. But I think that the best person to really impact the culture in America and right around the world is Donald Trump, because he transcends politics in many ways. And that's why I supported him from the get-go, and that's why I am very optimistic that he is really going to adopt many of those points that I included in my 10-point plan for the United States, because I think he's someone that wants to restore pride in the United States. I think he's someone that wants to restore self-belief, that wants to restore logic and common sense, that doesn't want to see the entitlement state and all of these other politically correct ideologies take any more greater route than what they already have. And so I think the 8th of November was a good day for America, and I think that everyone is going to benefit from it. I think he's going to make America a more prosperous place. I think he's going to make it a more American place, if that makes sense. You know, when I think about the United States, Jason, and before I was an immigrant, I was a lifelong admirer from the age of 7 or 8 years old. I used to go and tell people I want to go to America, and people thought I was crazy. But, you know, I'm not the only one. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Stuart Varney, there's so many, Elon Musk, there's so many of us that are born practically burning for the United States, almost inexplicably. But it's something about the optimism. It's something about having the chance to fail. It's something about the energy that exists. There's a culture of risk, and there's a reward for risk. And I guess when you come from a risk-averse culture like England or Australia or anywhere in Europe, you really just find the United States an amazing place. And I think that Donald Trump is going to preside over a far more American America than what we've seen in the last few years. I think we're going to see incentive rewarded. I think we're going to see hustle and risk reemerge, people coloring outside of the lines.
I agree. I agree with all that. The one thing you didn't mention about the comparison of America to other countries is you didn't mention what I'll call the tall poppy syndrome, and you probably know what I mean by that, where achievement in, say, Scandinavian countries, in Europe in general, especially Western Europe that's become so socialist, in Australia, New Zealand, I've been to 80 countries now. I'm a big traveler, so I have some familiarity in being born in Europe myself. You know, this kind of idea that you shouldn't stand out, that you shouldn't be exceptional, and America rewards that. Oh, well, at least that used to be the culture in America. under Obama, that certainly shifted for the worse, I thought. But I think that's going to become, it's going to come back into vogue with the Trump administration. You know, so I'd like you to maybe just add to your comments with a tall poppy syndrome idea. And, you know, if you notice that living outside of America.
Oh, without a doubt. Look, the single most powerful reason that I left Australia is because, while you're right, it does happen just about everywhere else, this tall poppy syndrome. Australia, I think, is, and it's not just my opinion, right? Anyone who does extensive reading on it will tell you the same thing. Australia is known as the worst proponent of the tall poppy syndrome, and it's why almost every single famous Australian that any of your listeners would be familiar with don't live, Jason, in Australia. They live in America. And that's because this is the only country in the world where success is not resented. And I should point out that the tall poppy syndrome, obviously that's an analogy for successful people, that it's a cut down to size so that they match with all the other poppies. I should mention that one of the fallacies associated with the tall poppy syndrome is that it extends merely to successful people. It certainly includes successful people, but it also includes anybody that does things differently, anybody that is outspoken, anybody that has confidence, essentially, anyone that applies a different approach, anyone that tries to blaze a trail or leave a legacy or differentiate themselves, I guess, in any way, even if it's unsuccessful, even if it doesn't bring financial success. That's all part of the tall poppy syndrome, where if you do all of those things in any other country, you're targeted. You become a target for the media, for the culture, for your neighbours, and for everything else. It was Greg Norman, who, another one of my great heroes and mentors, obviously a famous golfer, but in the last 20 or so years, an incredible businessman with wines, with clothing apparel, designing golf courses and everything else. And he said in his book something that always stayed with me when I was a teenager when I read it. He said that the difference between Australia and America can be summed up like this. an American teenager is going home from school, sees a bright red Ferrari in his neighborhood street, stops and says, wow, I want to get myself one of those. I want to work as hard as I got to work and do whatever I got to do to get me one of those. An Australian teenager in precisely the same situation, going home from school through his neighborhood street, sees a bright red Ferrari. What does he do? Gets out his key and scratches it.
Wow, that's really sad. But you know, I mean, just on balance, though, let's address some of the criticisms of some of the stuff you said earlier. I don't want to go into the material side of it that much, because anybody who believes that material resources and financial resources aren't important is just immature. Okay, just grow up. If you think that and you're listening to this, you're just really immature. Sorry, that's just the reality of it. It's not everything, but it is something. It is something. Okay. So assuming we've moved past that, what do you say to the critics of, you know, this kind of like American exceptionalism idea, though? A lot of people would view some of the stuff you said as racist, as improper, as, boasting. You know, there's all kinds of criticism out there of this type of belief system, isn't there?
It most certainly is, Jason, and I encounter it all the time. I've been subject to leftist opprobrium precisely for that reason. Look, there are four ways that a nation is said to be exceptional: culturally, militarily, economically, and scientifically. And on each of those four measurements, in almost 5,000 years of recorded human history, we have never, ever seen a country, a culture, or a people like the American culture, national people. No nation has ever dominated to the extent that America has, from the industrial age, the agricultural age, and now the information age. America has been at the forefront of all of those things. And everything that we use every single day, whether it's a GPS, whether it's the internet, whether it's emails, whether we catch a flight, whether we hop in a car, all of those things, whether we eat too much and someone has to perform the Heimlich maneuver, I mean, all of these things come from American ingenuity and innovation. And it's not an accident. American exceptionalism is not only provable, eminently so, but it's not accidental either. It came because the most prescient men to have ever walked this earth, the founders of the United States, understood that the way to unleash human capital, the way to unleash human ingenuity and creativity was to make sure that men and women were as unencumbered as possible by government red tape, the need for government approvals, and the like. And that's why we've seen America essentially shape the modern world that we live in today. And the other point of difference, Jason, with America and the rest of the world is that America is the only country that's not just a country. It is an idea. It is an ideal. It is a notion, an improbable and daring experiment. And for that reason, America attracts, you know, there's a certain amount of feeling and emotion you can have toward a culture and a fellow person, but you can really have a visceral, fierce, fevered hatred of an idea. And that's why America attracts such intense emotion, both love and hate. But look, America is the world's exceptional nation. If you took away America, you know, you'd have North Korea invading South Korea. You'd have Taiwan being overrun by China. You'd have Russia rebuilding the Soviet Empire. You'd have Islamic terrorists.
Well, as Dinesh D'Souza says, imagine a world without her.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. Very good point. Okay, so when it comes to the boomerang, talk to us a little bit more about the economic side of that, if you would. I know our time is limited, of course, but I want to make sure we touch on some of the economic issues here. And it does seem that Trump is very bullish for business. I mean, I'm sure sure you'd agree with that, but, you know, just any distinctions you want to make or drilling down on that.
Well, look, I think that Donald Trump is going to be a boon for big business, for small business, and everyone in between. I think that he is going to really make people feel very comfortable about investing, about taking a risk. I think all of that is going to happen without a shadow of a doubt. And that's a good thing, because we need people to be confident. We need the economy to be roaring as much as it possibly can be. So I'm very optimistic that he's going to do the things that need to be done. I think he's going to cut taxes. I think that he is going to really attack the debt, which is very, very important. I think he's going to avoid liberal math, Jason. And I think there are five things that America's got to do to economically boomerang. Because right now, America's got more problems than a math book. Because just consider this. If you started a business the day that Jesus was born and lost $1 million every year, you'd still be in better financial shape than the American government. So,
really scary.
So it is. So the American economy is in real trouble. But there's good news. America's economic failings are largely policy failings, and policy failings can always be fixed. Liberal math has led to economic weakness. So what needs to happen? There needs to be, Jason, a consensus-inspiring economic plan that Americans unite behind to avoid it. And it's not a very intricate plan either. I mean, I think it's a very simple five-step plan. We've got to cut taxes. There should be a limit on tax liability. The Economic Recovery Tax Act of 1981, championed by then-President Ronald Reagan, dropped inflation, unemployment, and interest rates massively. I think we've got to cut red tape and green tape and deregulate. I think we've got to stop spending so much money. I think we need to repatriate the almost $3 trillion held by American corporations overseas by waiving the 35% tax rate and getting that money back into the economy with those corporations hiring workers and purchasing equipment. I think we need to exploit energy resources even more. If Donald Trump can get behind any of those five, and I have a feeling he's going to get behind all five, then America is in for an even better time than the Reagan days. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's the roaring 80s. But liberals love to criticize the roaring 80s. I remember years ago seeing Bryant Gumbel, the leftist news anchor from the Today Show, criticizing he called it the greedy excesses of the Reagan era. And I thought, look at this hypocrite and all the millions of dollars he makes every year. It is mind-boggling the way Hollywood treats the other side of the aisle. You know, the right, the political right. It's just so hypocritical to me. They do everything they do is opposed to what they say. You know, it's this do as I say, not as I do mentality. It's pretty ridiculous, and it's surprising how many people don't see through that. But it's going to be interesting, and I've certainly been a critic of Trump enough. My listeners have heard it on the show, although I'm glad the criminal known as Hillary Clinton didn't win. I'll tell you that much. The thing about Trump that I think is going to be fascinating and potentially just awesome is that he has spent his entire life living in the real world, in the results economy, whereas these politicians that we've had running the government for the better part of five decades, if not longer, I mean, I just don't know my history well enough to go back further than that. These career politicians, they don't understand what it's like to produce results and to be on the hook for things. You know, everything is a bureaucracy and a committee and just an absurd kind of way of thinking. I mean, it's pretty exciting that stuff could really get done here. I mean, things could really happen. And I think, you know, there could be some real movement, a real change in our government for the better.
Absolutely. No, I think all of that's going to happen Jason, I think that America's in for a good time, at least for the next 4 years and potentially eight. I think he's got the makings of an incredible president, and provided that things go his way, and you know, there's always a little bit of luck involved, but provided he stays the course and some things go his way, I think we're going to be talking about a historic presidency.
Well, Nick, it is going to be fascinating to watch, that is for sure, and I'm looking forward to diving in and seeing what happens after January 20th. Give out your website and tell people where they can find out more about you and your books and so forth.
Well, that's very nice of you, Jason. Look, I'd encourage all of your listeners, if you enjoyed listening to this interview, to please go onto the website flagusa.org.
Oh, and tell us what FLAG stands for, by the way.
So FLAG is the Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness. It's a great name, so I'll say it again for you. The Foundation for Liberty and American Greatness. And it's a non-profit organization. It's the only organized fighting force against anti-Americanism in the culture. So we are committed to stopping the defamation of the American people, nation, and culture. We're an educational nonprofit. We go into as many elementary, middle, and high schools as we can, talking to kids about what makes America different, what makes it special, why is the Constitution the best political document ever written. We also serve as a media strike force team. So whenever America is libeled in the media, we make sure that we have a guest on all of the major networks, hitting back and countering with truth about the United States. So we are all about presiding over a conservative, patriotic revolution that will secure the American dream for another 200 years at least. We are filling the only vacuum that exists. The gallant men and women of the U.S. military have got our backs everywhere except the culture. And I think it's our responsibility to stand up and protect America in the culture. If you said 1/16 of the things that are said about America and Americans about any other country or people, you'd be hauled over the hot coals of every anti-discrimination commission and a human rights tribunal you could poke a stick at. But if you come out and say that America's oppressive and a terrorist and misogynistic and racist, the culture rewards you. It's a moral inversion of the worst kind, and flagusa.org, a 501c3 nonprofit, is committed to changing that culture.
Fantastic. Well, Nick Adams, thank you so much for joining us today, and we're going to look forward to a very, very interesting and fascinating 4 years of a Trump administration. So thank you for sharing some of your thoughts about it with us, and we appreciate having you on the show.
Thank you, Jason. Never been a better time to be an American.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.